everybody. This is Maggie from the Positude Shows. Tonight's show is a long overdue Positude Prophecy. I've been wanting to do one for a really long time, but fortunately for me, and hopefully fortunately for you, I've been blessed to have been able to obtain some really cool guests to interview, to get these people on to talk about their life experiences and share some really wonderful stories. In my excitement, I couldn't contain it. I got those shows right up there and out so that you would be able to enjoy them as well. And so consequently, we got kind of out of the lineup here a little bit. I'm hoping to be able to get back on track. So we're going to continue on tonight with a Positude Prophecy. So for tonight, I'd like to share some more things that I've seen with you. You know, to get started, I still go back always to the Nephilim. It's one of my favorite things to talk about, and the flood. And, you know, the first Positude Prophecy that I had done, I really was learning to edit my own material. I wasn't very good at it. There were some things that I would have liked to have changed with that first one, but it is what it is. It's out there. And, you know, hopefully people will understand that trying to do my own shows myself from soup to nuts and learning new programs to be able to do that wasn't exactly an easy venture for me. You know, somebody who's not very versed in computers and phones and technology and things like that. But I did the best that I could with it. So if you listen to it, please be gentle with me. There are some flubs in there, some things that I would have liked to have changed. But hopefully we will be able to clarify some of that stuff as we go forward. Is it a recant? No, it's not a recant. They're just words that I misspoke, but that's okay. So yeah, I always, you know, when I think about things that I've been shown, I always get stuck on the whole giants and the flood issue. Did they all die in the flood? You know, it's weird for me because Goliath was a Nephilim, King Og. There are many instances of giants spoken of in the Bible after the flood. So how could that be possible if they all perished in the flood? Well, recently I read a very different perspective from a book called Alien Agenda, The Return of the Nephilim by Aaron Judkins and Michael McDaniel, in which they say that they did all die in the flood, but that they came back afterwards, that the unholy angels again came down to earth and did the same thing that they did the first time. They started to mate with human women again to form, again, an evil bloodline. You know, when I think about that, that makes perfect sense to me. And I kind of hit myself on the head and go, wow, okay, so maybe that's how it happened. And I really don't understand some of the visions that I'm shown. I just know what I see, but it's not explained to me all the time. So it makes it difficult for me to try and muddle through and figure out, you know, why was I shown this? What's it about? One of the things that I was shown is that during the end times, evil will come up from the ground and also from the sky. I did see waters. I know that there are creatures that exist under the water that during end times will come out of the water. You know, it's kind of crazy. One of the things that I was shown and that had bothered me for a while was I was shown caves. I was shown tunnels. I had been shown that giants were still in existence in some of these really deep, dark caves. One of the things that I found interesting with that was I did find an article in which, and I think L.A. Marzulli did it, but don't quote me, in which there were soldiers in Afghanistan, and supposedly they unearthed a giant, they killed it, and then it was taken away, and the body was, I don't know, I guess discovered missing, went missing. But I was shown that. I do believe that in certain parts of the world, these things do exist, are still living. One of the things that I was shown is that they do exist not only to eat human flesh, that they exist on eating humans, but they also fought with each other. Some of them like each other, some of them don't. And I don't know if that's just because of the evil that's in them, you know, if it's because of I'm better than you or I'm more powerful than you, or if it's through different family, quote unquote, bloodlines. I'm not sure. We know that in the Bible, there were many different family bloodlines of the Nephilim. So it may have something to do with that. But they're very, very dark creatures. You know, they're very evil creatures. Why are they hiding? Why are they in these deep caves? You know, I don't know the reason for that. I'm really not sure. if it's because they feel that if they were to be exposed, they would be killed. You know, I don't know. We know they existed. We know, some of us know and believe that they're in existence today. Another thing that I was shown was that under the ground, there are creatures that are kept in a stasis kind of situation. It's like a sleep-like pattern where they appear to be asleep. You know, are these the creatures that are spoken of in the Bible? That are these the actual unholy angels that Jesus cast into hell in chains after they died? I don't know. I don't know what they are, but they're big, and they're very, very powerful. Their energy is extremely powerful. One thing that I can tell you was that they were bound in chains. However, the interesting thing to me is that it appeared to be a copper type material, which really, you know, that doesn't make sense to me when I think about it logically, because copper is a very malleable material. It's not something that would typically be considered to be strong, so that it could hold an entity of what I consider to be a really powerful, energetic being. So that didn't really make sense to me, but that's what I was shown. And that their energy radiates, even in the stasis they are right now. They're very, very powerful. Their energy protrudes. It emanates. And I can remember a couple of years ago, there are very few people that I had shared this particular vision with. But one of the people that I had shared it with was someone who had done years of study with a rabbi. And in the course of his studying with the rabbi, he was told things that, you know, obviously everybody's not meant to know. They have secrets and they don't want the general population to know some of these things that they know. And so they don't tell a lot of people. When I discussed my vision with him, he got really quiet and he said to me, I'm going to share this with you. The rabbi told me when we were talking about Nephilim, the giants, fallen angels, etc., that there are beings that exist under the ground and they are in much like what you spoke of, you know, a motionless state, and also that they were bound in chains of copper. And I'm thinking, well, that's kind of strange. That's really cool for me because it's an affirmation again of what I've seen. But what kind of sense can we make of that? What does it mean? And so he went on to tell me, he actually elaborated on the story and said that what the rabbi had told them was that there were a series of monks. I don't know from what order. I don't know where on earth this was. He would not specify, and I did not press the issue. I was just really happy with the fact that somebody was corroborating a vision that I'd had. So I didn't want to press the issue too much. I found that the information that he was able to share with me, I felt was valuable to me. So whatever he would give me, I would take. Let's put it that way. And he went on to say that that these series of monks would pray and fast for days on end. And they had discovered a tunnel or a cave in which some of these beings were. And I don't know how, but they started to travel down this tunnel and it descended deeper and deeper. And what he told me was that they would pray and fast for days and then descend. And they would get to a certain point in which the energy that came from below became so powerful that they would have to then retreat. So the way that I understand it is they would wait a little while longer, pray and fast some more, and then venture down the tunnel again and get a little bit farther, at which point the energy would again, you know, make them retreat, and so on and so forth. And so there were a series of adventures, let's call them, where these monks would pray and they would fast for days, and then they would go into the tunnel, get to a certain point, retreat, go in again, get a little farther, retreat. And that's basically all that he seemed to know on the subject. But again, it collaborated with what I had seen. So that was really cool. The way that the energy was described to me was that it was very, very powerful, so that when the monks had actually gotten to the point in the tunnel at each visit where they felt it, it was very, very, very strong. They were filled with a tremendous feeling of fear, fear in which they had never known before, trepidation. They were basically scared out of their wits. And the energy was so strong and so powerful and so incredibly evil that they had to leave. They felt that if they had tried to stay, they would certainly perish, and they wanted to continue their journey. So they would retreat, pray, go forward. So that was pretty cool to me. You know, what are they? What are they doing there? Are they the Nephilim? Are they possibly the fallen angels? Are these tunnels really something that can descend as far down as what we would consider hell, what Jesus, the Bible, calls hell? You know, I don't know. But one of the other things that I was shown in vision is that some of these beings have been discovered, and they've been unearthed, and they've been taken up out of the ground, and they've been tested. Some of them have been awakened, and you know, this is really weird, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you, the government knows that they're there, and they're the ones that are taking these creatures, that have taken these creatures out from under the ground and done experimentation on them, wakened them, some of them I didn't, because of the tests that they did on them, I don't know that they're alive anymore, but there were samples. I saw samples being taken, and I saw scientists in labs doing genetic mutation, you know, trying to take these cells and incorporate them manually into physical beings, human beings, I should say. And so when I have read a couple of stories about the government and their intent to create super soldiers, I have to tell you that that's right in line with what I was shown, that these creatures' DNA are being used to formulate beings such as this. And it's not just human beings too. I also see animals being experimented with. And I know that there's a lot of that out there on YouTube and stuff right now. I gotta be honest, I don't watch a lot of that stuff. I'm really hesitant to watch a lot of that stuff. First of all, because I don't want it to affect what I'm being shown or influence what I'm being shown. I wanna make sure that what I'm being shown is really pure, you know? And also, when I look at something, sometimes I can turn the video on and immediately I feel a fake, you know, false. It's not true. And so I shut it off. So yeah, a lot of the creatures that I see on YouTube, it's Photoshopped. It's not real. But one of the things that I can tell you is that this does exist and it is going on, and it is for very nefarious purposes. I can tell you that there is a research facility, actually, and I'm not really willing to divulge where exactly that facility is. I had the occasion to drive past that facility many, many times. And every time I came within a 5 mile maybe radius, and then especially like a 2 mile radius, I felt really evil feelings emanating from the general direction of this building. I felt really dark energy. I was starting to see different creatures, faces, and bodies. I was seeing, again, laboratory experiments. I was seeing some of these creatures in chains, some of them being held in, like, kind of weird, an upside down bell jar, like a glass enclosure. Some of them appeared to be awake, some of them not. I also saw some of them on tables, metal examining tables, with pieces, you know, they were being cut up. Very, very strange. But whenever I got within, especially like a 2 mile proximity of this particular building, again, it was a feeling of foreboding, dread, evil, malice. Also, though, they were aware that I was there. They were feeling me like I was feeling them. You know, you hear the word handlers, definitely. That's part of the energy that I felt, is that the people, the creatures, because in that research facility, what was there, the people that looked human weren't all human. I know that sounds crazy, but they weren't 100% human. They were like a hybrid, and they knew, they felt my energy like I felt theirs. And it was a warning. It was almost like a don't come near here, very menacing, very threatening. So I started to question, because I didn't know what the energy was or where it was coming from. some of the people that I was spending time with in that area. And I said, what's going on around here? I'm feeling something. It's really crazy. Told them what I was feeling. And then I was told, that one of these guys worked at this particular research facility for several years, and that he also had come to the conclusion that down in the lower levels, there were scientific research experiments being done in which there were creatures there that were not human. And also in his experience of working there, he had come in direct contact several times with particularly one superior that he absolutely felt wasn't 100% human, wasn't of human origin entirely. And that man, this guy at the time was pretty spiritual. That man and he didn't get along. They kind of did the whole eyeballs in the hallway as they walked through, past each other. And they didn't like each other. They could feel each other's energy, one being good, one being not good. So they had some run-ins that way. So I asked him, he told me a couple stories about things he had experienced there. One thing in particular is that as a result of him working there, there was something that came to him in the night. And he was sleeping on the sofa, and it approached him, and it woke him up. And for some reason, he turned around, just kind of looked at it, rolled back over, and went to sleep. But the being that appeared to him was cat-like in nature, almost oriental looking around the eyes. And so this creature, just appeared in his living room one night. And, it is very interesting to me that rather than him turn around, look at it and try and, rebuke it, right? He just rolled around and went back to sleep. When I focused on what he had told me, right away, a flood of stuff came forward. And what I had seen was that this was definitely a very malevolent creature, that it was sent there against him. What I was shown was that it absolutely was there to either exterminate him or at least get inside of him, like a possession type situation. But I definitely got the impression that it was there to eventually kill him, right? But also what I was shown to him, or what I was shown rather, and I explained to him, was something that he had absolutely no idea about, is there as a friend, a very close friend of his in that circle, that's very, very faithful, that's very, very strong in the Lord, and as a result of that, has very powerful healing and protective qualities about him. And he's been able to help a lot of people to make them better when they're sick. And what I saw was when this creature presented itself, this guy felt it subconsciously. I don't think he was aware of it at the time. This creature was sitting right next to the sofa by the head to, let's say, the waistline of the guy that was, that had seen it, that had turned around and seen it in his sleep and then rolled back over, which that to me, I told him, I said, I'm being shown there's something that was placed there over you so that you would not pay attention to it, maybe would think it was a dream and go back to sleep, so that you wouldn't rebuke it, so that you wouldn't get rid of it. But as the energy intensified and the evil intensified in the room, the man that he was friends with also appeared and was sitting at a chair at his feet. And that gentleman wasn't physically there, but it was almost like in a subconscious state. You hear so many stories about bilocation. We hear stories about Jesus being able to bilocate. I've had some experience with that. It's not something that I intended to do, but just kind of happened. I'd be working on my girlfriend in North Carolina, and, she'd be in pain, and she would call me up afterwards and say, I don't know how you did what you did, but I literally felt you sitting next to me. I could feel your arms working on me. I could see you sitting next to me on the sofa. But, in all reality, in the physical plane, I was here in my living room or in my kitchen. And so I think that in that instance, that's what happened to him, is for whatever reason, this gentleman was made aware of what was going on subconsciously. I think, again, he fought. He protected his buddy. He became very, very sick as a result of that. I saw him being very, very tired, very, very weak, very sick for days. But him sitting there, it was like he was talking to his friend, don't let it get to you, don't let it take over, and just trying to send peace and love and protection to kind of blanket his buddy. is what saved him. I think had that not happened, you know, he wouldn't be here today, right? So, but anyway, this other gentleman was weak and tired and sick for a prolonged period of time because of that. And when I spoke to him about it, he was like, he went crazy on me because he was very excited at the fact that I could pick up on that. And I guess there was a period of time where he didn't know why, but he was very, very tired, very drained, physically ill, couldn't move, you know, from his sofa or his bed for several days after. He doesn't know what triggered it. He doesn't know why it occurred. He just knows that it happened. So that was pretty cool. I thought, interesting story again. What I did see is that he was able to thwart that being from killing this person. Unfortunately, I didn't see him being totally victorious in that this guy was afflicted. He was afflicted. He was made very, very sick because of the encounter with that being. It's my belief, because of subsequent conversations that we've had, that it was at that point that this being was able to not only make him very, very physically ill, but be able to have some infiltration into his spiritual self. And the reason that I say that is because the guy that I spoke to that I did the deliverance on a couple years after his experience with this being, well, the same guy. So at that time, his belief processes changed. As I said, he came away from spirituality, from God, and started to pursue all these other life paths. And then as a result of that, you know, me being a friend and a close confidant and, you know, really having a lot of respect for the guy and the work that he had done previously in helping people and healing people. Truly, this guy and the guy that was at the end of the couch were very apostle-like in nature at one point. They traveled two by two across the country, you know, learning different things and helping people virtually at their expense, you know, at no cost to the people. But they were able to help a lot of people get better that were sick and do really kind things for other people previous to that, several years before this occurrence. So, interesting again, I think. So when I was shown, you know, as we're coming into the end times and things that would occur, again, creatures coming out of the ground, creatures coming from the water, yes, I consider that kind of to be from, you know, from the flat plane, from the ground plane. So to me, it's kind of one and the same. I don't know if that makes sense to you. But also coming from above, when I first had heard about the project entitled CERN, you've heard me say this before in many interviews, immediately I just knew that this was a very nefarious project, that it was not for any pure intent whatsoever, but that it was a very, very evil, evil thing that was being put in place, and that we were going to suffer great consequences as a result of the experiments that are taking place and have taken place there. And a lot of you also have heard me say that, you know, it definitely is affecting the energy on the planet. It definitely is allowing evil to come into the earth. And for me, again, that is a testament to what I've seen, because it's my belief, I wasn't shown this, but it's my belief that it's letting things out that were trapped here for years, and also allowing evil to flow in different forms. And when I say different forms, what I mean is physically, when I see these things, they don't look, all of them at least, look particularly human. Again, we'll talk about some of the other things I've seen on a different episode, but I did see them coming in. And then we get on the UFO topic. We can elaborate on that in future episodes. But when we hear stories of alien abductions and things like this, those creatures are not pure. They're very malicious in intent. UFOs are definitely not, how do I say? They're very evil, okay? The things that will come down in the form of UFOs, you know, will be these shiny, happy creatures, you know, that are very intelligent in nature, and they will affect mankind. They will influence so much of humanity in that they will pretend to be of the light. And that's a huge part of the New Age deception is, you know, they're all waiting to be enlightened, right? So these things are going to come down. They're going to be shiny, happy, white, you know, looking angelic type looking creatures, humanoid in appearance. And they will say, you know, look, we seated you here. We put you here because of the war, because of the destruction, because of the desolation of the environment that humans have attributed to on the planet. We're here to save you. We don't want to see you be destroyed. We don't want to see you. We don't want to see you fail. So we've come back to save you. And at that time, there will be great miracles that they will be able to perform. There will be great scientific knowledge that will be passed on, technology. They will just be the bomb as far as a lot of people see them. And so a great many people will be fooled into thinking that we were seated here and that these creatures are here to help us. But that's not what I've been shown. What I've been shown is that is the great deception that's spoken of in the Bible. They're very evil. And we'll get into that on some later episodes, but that's, you know, kind of the outline of what I was shown insofar as that. And another thing that I was shown is that, you know, when we speak about the pyramids, I recently read a book that was provided to me by Dr. Aaron Judkins. It's his book, Alien Agenda, The Return of the Nephilim. It's co-written with by Michael E. McDaniel. And there were some really interesting concepts in that book. And again, it correlated to some of the things that I've been shown. And you really need to pick up a copy of this book and read it, because there are very, very fascinating concepts in here that are backed up by biblical scripture. And that to me is just totally amazing. You know, again, because it correlates with a lot of the stuff that I've been shown, but they're also able to back it up with scripture. And one of the things that they say in the book is that the pyramids are they call it a stargate. Pyramids are stargates. Well, one of the things that I was shown too, and there are so many topics that I'm just skirting that I'm going to go into a lot greater detail on future episodes. We'll pick one topic and just do like a whole show on it. But as an outline, there was a period of time that there was a man that came to me. And this man was what's known as a dowser. You know, to me, typically, dowsers were somebody, you know, people that looked for water, you know, Native Americans and people, you know, in prairie times, or, you know, even nowadays, you know, there are old country guys that use sticks, twigs to divine where water is under the ground. Well, this guy, he does this to find buried treasure and stuff, I guess. And so he's got these clients that come to him. He uses whatever he uses. I don't use tools, so I don't really know too much about it, but he uses these tools to divine where lost treasures are, or artifacts from, you know, maybe a family history. And so he came to me one day, and this guy, you know, he had the choice to go to a lot of different people. There were many other people that he could have chosen to come to, but he chose to come to because he knew that the work that I had done, you know, the stuff that I had seen it resonated with him. He must have felt, you know, akin to some of the things that I had seen. And so he chose to come to me. Well, this guy had a whole bunch of maps, and he was like, reminded me of this little Indiana Jones, old skinny Indiana Jones. But, you know, he had a, you know, hat on his head and a whole bunch of maps, and he laid them all out in front of me. And he says to me, okay, now this one is a family in, you know, let's say South Carolina. And this is their area. And, you know, I need you to try and figure out where treasure is, or whatever, you know. And there were a whole bunch of them that he had that day. And so I looked at him, and I'm like, you know, dude, I'm not really, this isn't my thing, but, you know, I can try and see if I can figure out what it is you want me to find out. So, but anyway, in one of the maps that he had, it was off the coast of Florida. It was the lower part of the United States, specifically. And he was looking for something in the Florida region. Again, you know, this is not something that I didn't know what I was doing, but, you know, I've been able to help people find missing objects before and find things that were missing, you know, but then again, that's all kind of been through prayer work. So I really didn't know what he wanted me to do, but I closed my eyes and I ran my hand over different areas of the map, you know, and where I could feel all of a sudden my hand would just stop over an area and would vibrate, you know. And so I says to him, well, my eyes were shut. So I'd open my eyes. And he would say to me, well, that's where I thought it was, or I thought it was in that region or whatever type of thing. So we get to the map where Florida was shown and the water below Florida. And I kept going back to a period, a body of water beneath Florida. And I kept that area for me, for some reason, my hand was just immediately drawn there. It kept going back there. And he kept saying to me, no, no, that's not where I'm looking. I'm looking, you know, in this part of Florida. And, you know, I'd close my eyes and my hand would go right back to that same body, portion of the body of water. And and it was strong. It was much, much stronger. It was almost like a magnetic field to it. It was like my hand kept going back to that area. And I felt pulsing and I felt like almost a throbbing. And it was at that point, I asked, I said, what am I seeing? It's water, you know, it's water. Why am I having this really strong vibratory reaction to what's there? And I was shown underwater pyramids. Subsequently, what I was shown is that there are not just one, but there are more than one. You know, they may have been flooded over as the earth has gone through cyclical changes and we've experienced different things. You know, geographically, a lot of changes. They may have been submerged in water, but the feeling that I got, I definitely know that some of them were built underwater for a purpose. They were put there underwater to be underwater for a distinct reason that is not a pure reason. What's built them there and what exists there or has existed there, what's still there? Very nefarious. Very evil in nature, not something that's of God. I know that there are things under the water as well as in the ground, as well as the fact that I've seen some of the creatures that live underwater that are very different from things that we'd be very shocked to see were they to present themselves today in real life. And part of the origins of those creatures are, yes, you know, the dragons that are spoken of in the Bible, Loch Ness Monster, things like that. We'll get into that on another episode. Yes, yes, they're real. Yes, they exist. They have existed. Some of those creatures are very evil, and they're presenting themselves as a physical creature because, you know, the fallen angels, they don't need a body to live. It's an energy. They're disembodied spirits at times, and so they can take the form or the shape of whatever it is that they choose. Some of these creatures that I was shown, what I was shown is that's how they will choose to present themselves, or those are the creatures that they will choose to present themselves as, or very scary looking creepy, dragon-like entities, okay? So, and I've had several visions in regards to the whole dragon thing too, that's spoken of in the Bible. And I've actually fought in the spiritual realm, you know, in spiritual warfare, creatures that have that type of appearance. And I'll talk about that also on later episodes. You know, in Chinese culture, in so many cultures, dragons are revered. They're not good people. What you have to understand is that all of these religions tie in to the biblical narrative. Mm-hmm. They're not good things, things that we've been worshiping for years and revering for years as a spinoff of Christianity is very demonic in nature, is very evil in intent, and very evil in origin. I'm going to do a show about what I was shown about Egypt and the pyramids there and the deities and the things that were revered there and what they truly are. All of that stuff is not of pure nature. It's not from God. Going back briefly to the whole research center. So I asked and I was told, yeah, this is a facility that I worked at. This is what I felt when I was there. These are my experiences, is what the gentleman shared with me. And I mean, anytime I drove within that vicinity, I was just doing spiritual warfare the entire time. I don't know how else to say it, but that's what I was doing. I was praying against, I was rebuking. I was constantly doing prayer work anytime I was in the vicinity of that place. I actually convinced him to take me there. I said, look, I don't, for whatever reason, because of the energy that he experienced, because of the being that he experienced, which was very demonic in nature, I didn't think that it was a good idea that he went with me. What I wanted was for him to stay put several miles away and just describe to me the immediate area and how to get onto the grounds, right? So that I could go there and do direct prayer work right there on the premises. And it's funny because every time I thought about it, immediately I would be mentally attacked. I would feel feelings of fear coming in, feelings of trepidation coming in, warnings, a lot of warnings, like, you know, kind of don't, this is our turf, don't come here. And I was like, no, that's not going to work with me. You know, what I have is way stronger than what they were throwing. And I knew that. So I convinced him to take me. I was very much against the fact that he wanted to go with me. But, you know, like I said, we were good buds at the time. And he's like, well, if you're going to go, I'm going to go too. I don't want you going alone. And I didn't want that. But he wouldn't tell me and wouldn't take me unless I went with him. So he kind of had my hands tied. So one day we went out there. As soon as I got into a little parking area to where we could park and get out, I had been praying the whole way there for several hours previous to that. And so I was geared up. My armor was on. I went in. I protected him as well. I did all sorts of prayers to protect his safety. And we went in and I blessed the ground around the whole one side of the perimeter, did a bunch of prayer work in there. The biggest thing that came to me at that time was over and over, they're watching. And I could actually feel them looking out the windows, you know, and I knew that they knew that I was there. What we did was, it was actually a kind of a blessing that he did go with me, because we walked through, like we were strolling, the little garden area next to it. Every so often I'd bend down and I kneel and I pray and I do the ground blessing, right? And but to an outsider who didn't know what we were doing, it would appear as though we were kneeling down, smelling the flowers or looking at the landscaping, or, you know, looking at statues that were around, things like that. The entire time that I was there, as I said, I was feeling a very strong negative force, because it's my belief, because I was so close in proximity, in my mind, I got a real clear picture, a much clearer picture of what these things actually looked like, and also the ones that looked like humans that were there. And I have had several experiences with what people call reptilians. I can say in all honesty that I've seen two, at least, that I'm aware of, that I recognize them for what they are when I saw them, two probably hybrid creatures. And, you know, they have a very distinct energy and a very distinct feel to them. They're very, very strong. Their energy is very powerful. It's very dark. It's very evil. It's very malicious and intense. And we'll go into that also on future episodes. But there were two, at least two reptilians. And then I think two Nephilim. The one, I'm kind of confused actually as to what exactly it was, whether it was one or the other, the former or the latter. But the energy that was protruding was absolutely very, very evil in nature. Very scary, creepy, if you didn't know what you were coming up against. And, you know, and they do that. You know, it's, again, they sense the good people and we sense them. You know, they knew what I was and I knew what they were. There's a really cool story that I'll tell you too in future episodes. There's a story when I was driving where I actually saw what appeared to be a woman, her whole face contorted and transfigured. And if anybody's ever seen the movie Push, it's very likened to one of the scenes in that movie where the whole face just kind of blew up. The eyes became very large. The mouth became huge. I saw two rows of teeth. It was like, it was very, very quick. It was very, very vivid. It was meant to me as a warning. It was split second, the face transformed. And then as quick as it came, it was back to a human face, and then the vehicle sped off. So I'll tell you that story too. And there was another instance too in which I've seen one of those women that I've seen a couple of videos about. People talk about these giant women. Mm-hmm. I had one actually right outside my house one day. So yeah, very evil in nature, very Amazon-like in appearance, very, very tall, long blonde hair, blue eyes. This woman was doing things that physically should not be possible, right out, you know, 15 feet on my sidewalk. And initially she wasn't aware that she was being observed. And then all of a sudden it was like at the same time our eyes locked. I was looking at her through my window. She saw me and I saw her. And again, the face started to transform, to transfigure. And it was almost like she caught herself. It didn't that time, but I did get a really glimpse, a good view of the eyes, which didn't stay blue. They turned black and then back again. And then she, it was like Wonder Woman, man, she was gone. So that was pretty cool. You know, they come to us in all kinds of forms, these evil beings, and they look really different. It's really amazing to me, some of the things that I've seen and how they appear and feeling the energy there. And I think it's very interesting that they always feel me too. You know what I mean? They always know that I'm there, which is that eternal battle, right? But again, going back to that research facility, those were some of the creatures that were there. Some of the ones in charge, what I was shown, are definitely not only hybrid in nature, but there are some on the upper echelon that are, they don't hide their appearance. It's very obvious to anybody who's looking for signs of things like this as to what they are and what their origin is. So, and that's just one facility. Right? That's just one that I had direct contact with and direct knowledge of. I know that others exist. I know that there are more of them. I know that when we talk again of the underground, the creatures coming from the underground, yeah, you know, the stories of the bases that you hear about in the installations, things like that, where there is testing being done and where there are different plans being put into place, those things underground are real. Those cities and things that we hear about are real. Some of the things in the sky, too. There's somebody that I watch who takes photographs of clouds and blows up the clouds. And it's amazing to me the things that are vividly apparent when you blow up the picture. For those, for the untrained eye, for people who are just looking up at the clouds, you know, you wouldn't notice that kind of thing. I've always been a cloud watcher. I've always loved to lay on my back on the grass and look at the sky, the clouds and the stars. So many times I've seen things there. And when I pray on it, I'm shown what these really are. You know, you have to understand that the world we live in is not really as it appears. There are different realms. There are different levels. There are different levels of heaven. I've spoken about that briefly before. What we're looking at when we look up into the sky, some of us are able to see a higher plane, you know, a higher, I don't know what you want to call it. You know, I don't know what specific word is, but we're able to see what's the next level up from us. And that is where a lot of these demonic forces are operating. That's where a lot of them are hanging, you know. And again, we go back to CERN. CERN is directly working with those different levels to bring things in. And again, it's my belief to let things out that have been trapped here. Also, going back to what I was shown and then what my friend at the time had told me about the rabbi. One of the things that I find interesting, and I can't figure this one out. If anybody's got some insight, get a hold of me and maybe you can help me figure this out. But the whole bound in chains thing and the whole copper thing, I really don't get that. I don't know why it was shown to me that way. I only know that the gentleman got really excited, told me what his rabbi friend told him. You know, there's obviously something there, right? I had also read or seen an article about a Nephilim sword that was unearthed. You know, we know that there have been many shields and pots and, you know, giant things that giant creatures would have used to live, to eat, to fight with. Again, I think that was L.A. Marzulli that came out with a video where he showed a picture of a sword, a giant sword that had been unearthed. And one of the things that struck me was that he mentioned, if it were him, I tried to find that show. I went crazy trying to find the show or whatever it was on YouTube. I can't find it. He mentioned that part of it was made from copper, like the inside of it was copper. And that was very interesting to me because knowing that these creatures fought each other as well as humans and knowing that they ravaged humans and ate humans, if there's something to the copper, if it was copper, and I believe it was that I was shown, and then again, according to what the rabbi said. How interesting is that? Is that the inside of the sword or part of the sword was made of copper? And I wonder, you know, out loud to myself, is that because copper is kind of like a kryptonite would be to Superman to these types of creatures? Is it something that for whatever reason they become weakened by? And is that why it was part of what was forged into the instruments? Or was it simply just a metal insofar as a sword that was easily obtained back in that time period? Not a scientist. That's something that I've pondered, you know, is it because they knew that it was a very effective tool in rendering the other one powerless, kind of like the old vampire and the wooden stake stories. I don't know, but it's interesting to me. Again, because of the fact that copper is such a malleable material, why would they put it into a sword? Is it because it was plentiful in nature, something that was, you know, easy for them to obtain, and then they use that for the guts of the sword and then put a harder material on the outside? You know, maybe, but if something's not right, something sticks with me there. It means something. I just can't figure out what. Like I said, I'm shown things, but I'm not always given an explanation to what I'm shown. But I can tell you that in several times in prayer work, I was guided to wear copper for protection. That's one of the things, too, that guy had corroborated with the rabbi, was that the bad guys don't like copper. Well, I was shown that. I can tell you that when I do deliverance work, when I come into contact with someone, considering, you know, whether or not they need a deliverance and being able to discern if it's, you know, what's going on with them, their eyes always seem to focus on, you know, I could have a copper bracelet under my shirt, you know, under like a long sleeve shirt or a blouse or even a hoodie. Their eyes always go to that spot. Even if it's not something that's visibly obvious, sometimes they wear copper earrings, their eyes will seem to fixate on the copper, which I think is very interesting too. So again, you know, there's something to it. I just can't figure out what it is, but it means something. It always means something. Typically when I have this type of vision, you know, later on down the line, it'll present itself or it'll be made painfully obvious to me. And I'll go, oh man, that's what it meant. This one's kind of stumped me. I got to be honest. But there's definitely something to it. Let's see, what else? Part of the thing that stumps me with that is when we read about Goliath, Goliath's helmet was made of brass, which is a derivative of copper, right? Brass is copper and zinc. Is that right? I got to research that more. I have to look into it and try and figure this one out because it's been bugging me. But anyway, that's what I saw. That's what I was told by the rabbi, the friend of the rabbi, I should say. And it, you know, the angels and darkness thing in the Bible, too, I keep going back to that. Is that what these things are? Is that hell? These underground tunnels, do they really lead down to the depths of hell? Really something to be considering, something to kind of reflect on and try and figure out. Going back to the, you know, the Nephilim bloodline, that's also something that, crazy as it sounds, able to recognize in certain people. Not just due to physical characteristics, that's part of it, but there are certain people that I've come into contact with in my life that I definitely feel, again, a different energy about them. And you know what? So many times they're not even aware of it outwardly anyway. They appear to be really good people. So crazy to me that this bloodline, the Nephilim bloodline, has continued on as these guys marry and produce children in today's day and age. A lot of people don't even marry anymore, but they produce offspring, right? I'll come into contact with somebody, I'll meet someone, and even though outwardly they appear to be very nice or very good people, there's always something a little off about them. I can feel that. It's very hard for me to describe. I could speak very personally. I had a very, very personal experience with someone that I would bet everything that I had has that bloodline in them, and the whole family does as well. And it is strange to me that the entire family are very big, very tall, especially the females. They're very uncharacteristically tall, large, big for their age, children, very tall, big boned. It's not just that, though. It's not just their physical appearance. Their energy is just very, very different. It's very, you know, outwardly, they appear to be good people, but inwardly, I can feel the energy that's there, it's not good. As I had more intimate dealings with these people, and as the relationship progressed, I was just, it was constant reaffirmation to what I had felt that was guiding me to, hey, take a better look at this, you know, pay attention. Because as time went on, the entirety pretty much of the family exposed themselves for the kind of nature that really was inside of them, which on the outside appeared to be very kind, giving, generous in nature. But when you delve deeper, their actions specifically went against how they tried to appear on the outside. They were very manipulative, very deceptive people. You know, I don't know if everybody can recognize that. If you know, when you meet someone, you just instantly you get that gut feeling, right? That gut pull that somebody is able, you know, not the person that they appear to be. You know, I often wonder about that too. Yeah, because of the spiritual warfare thing, I know that it's because so many nowadays are influenced by the demonic because they have an affliction or they have a full-blown possession, right? But that's not always the case. Sometimes it's just a matter of the energy that's within them. And I wonder so often about that and what, you know, when people feel that, I just knew, I just had the gut and think that that wasn't a good person. How much of that is in direct relation to the bloodline carried within them, the Nephilim bloodline specifically? So in my experience, it's one or the other. And in a lot of cases, they're intermingled. People that I feel have that kind of bloodline are typically afflicted or affected by definite markings of the unholy, whether it be a possession. Something for you to think about is when you meet somebody that turns their stomach, do you know other members of their family? You know, what are they like? Are they inherently the same type of energy? You know, is it a whole host of people who are appearing to be really nice on the outside, but they're not on the inside? And does that mean all big people are bad? No, absolutely not. That's not what that means. We all have many different types of natures. Specifically, I met an individual last evening. Initially, at the onset, what I got right away was that this person was very closed, that this person was very secretive in nature. And upon conversing with this individual, you know, I could feel a very closed, private, a lot of secrecy, you know. And so we were talking, you know, he mentioned to me a past relationship and how the relationship didn't work out. And this wasn't like a dating environment or anything. Don't get the wrong idea. It wasn't somebody that I was romantically interested in, because trust me when I tell you that pretty much non-existent for me anymore. As I'm happy where I'm at. And because of some of the relationships that I've experienced, I'm extremely hesitant to even go down that road. Trust me. But anyway, we were talking about a previous relationship. He brought up an ex-girlfriend and then an ex-wife. And in both cases, I felt that there was much more to the story than what he was leading me to believe. And definitely, I saw immediately going through his bloodline a lot of deception, a lot of secrecy. Saw in his bloodline that there were different gifts that were passed along generationally as well. Boy, you know, I kind of looked at him. And he was a really big guy, right? Coincidentally. And, you know, eventually I just called him out on it. I'm like, look, I appreciate the fact that you want to talk to me. This has been somewhat of a pleasant conversation, but I got to be honest in telling you that, you know, a lot of the stuff that you're telling me, you got a lot of secrets. There's a lot of stuff that's hidden that you're not sharing with me. And that's cool. You know, that's your prerogative, but don't try and lead me in one direction, you know, and kind of lead me down one path with your words when I'm distinctly feeling something entirely different. Is that to say that, you know, he was portraying his exes in a really bad light, or, you know, trying to pump himself up, showing me that he was a really decent individual and, you know, his previous relationships were just, they were bad people and he had bad judgment? No, it wasn't like that. It was just, there was more to it. And I just kept feeling that there were many secrets involved, and that, again, it went back generationally with him, that was just a quality of his quote-unquote people. When I called him out on it, he kind of looked at me, and he said, you know, I really want you to meet my mom. And, you know, told me some stories about his mom and some of the things that she had experienced. He wanted me to talk with her. At that point, he came forward, and he said, You're absolutely right. My bloodline, historically, my people, he called them my people, and he wasn't Jewish, you know, so it wasn't like, you know, a Holocaust survivor victim, stuff like that. Although there was some Jewish and some Nazi Germany soldiers in his history. he said there's a lot of secrets, things specifically on my mother's side that were passed down generation to generation that are kept very much a secret. And that, and then he told me his last name. He actually wrote it down for me. And he said, I'm going to even give you my last name. And he says, this isn't a very common name. And it was like kind of a hint, you should research his last name, go through my trees, whatever. Yeah, I really don't have time for that. You know, I mean, it was a one-time deal. Probably I'll never see the person again in my life. He finally came clean and alluded to that, or actually came out and said that, yeah, I was right. So, you know, I wonder about that. And, you know, I just was observing him from a distance, demeanor and his actions. I definitely felt that, you know, I felt that he had that bloodline in him, you know, and that to some degree he was aware of it because of some of the stories that he told me. So very cool stuff, you know. Yeah, he'll go out in the street and go, hey, are you a Nephilim bloodline? Or, you know, pay attention to the feelings that you get when you're around them. And, you know, when you have discernment and you can pray on things, things become much clearer to you. Can these people help their bloodline? Absolutely not. You know, it's a genetic thing, right? We can't change who we are. We can't change our DNA. But it's striking to me that the people that I feel this way about, I always kind of assimilate with that kind of energy. So frequently I do. As I said before, it's either a real demonic, an influence, or I feel like it goes back through their bloodline. It's not something that they can control. Another thing that I find interesting is that some of these people really, I think, try to be good people. They try to do their best, but there's something inside of them that just prevents them from being the person that they really truly want to be or wish that they were. And, you know, do I think it's an intentionally deceptive thing, you know, that they're presenting themselves one way when in essence their soul, you know, is really not clean, is not pure, is got a lot of bad stuff going on inside of them. I think that it goes both ways. I think that there are people who deliberately deceive us, you know, obviously on purpose, but I do think that there's an influence there with the genetics and the bloodline to where these people really want to be good people. They want to be good, productive members of society. They want to be helpful to others. They want to be the best person that they can be, but there's just something there that prevents that from them becoming that person entirely. A lot of times it's hidden way beneath the surface and it requires some digging, or it comes out after even months of talking to this person or having a friendship or a relationship with that person. It's, you know, again, very interesting to me. It makes me wonder, products of that bloodline, are they totally unable to change what's in them or to influence, you know, the bloodline that's inside of them and overcome that and become pure? You know, again, you know, part of me wants to believe that that's God's free will, right? If we come to God and we are born again and we totally follow the path that we're supposed to, can we overcome that evil that's even genetically in our bloodline? I'd like to believe that that's the case. In the instances of the people that I've encountered, you know, that's been part of the problem. They haven't come to Christianity. They haven't resolved their issues. They are New Agers or of different belief structures. And that's what's prohibiting them, right? That is what I feel. Is there hope? Yeah, absolutely. I think there is. I think that, you know, if they come to God, regardless of what's inside of them genetically, they will be saved. I believe that our God is a very loving God. And it's also my belief that, you know, in the end times, angels that have gone against God, the reason that they're being bound in the surface of the hell, or being bound rather in hell for now to await the final days of judgment when Jesus returns, I really want to believe that at that time, they will have the opportunity to come back to God and that God will take them in and enfold them and be like he is with us. You know, when we sin, if we truly ask for forgiveness and we repent, we're forgiven. Why wouldn't it be that way with them too? You know, I don't know. It's not spoken of in the Bible. It's a hope, I guess, that I have, is that maybe some of them will see the errors of their ways and want to come back to God, and therefore, as a result, would be forgiven by God. You know, I don't know. It's not spoken of in the Bible. You know, a lot of things that are in the Bible, and I've said this before, and it actually was directly quoted by a person who follows my work and then copies my work in his blog. Just because it's not specifically written in the Bible that we know today doesn't mean that it's not true or doesn't exist. Take, for instance, the Book of Enoch, right? There's where we have gleaned a lot of knowledge on the Nephilim and the fallen angels. Just because it's specifically not in the Bible as we know it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist or that it can't be possible. I think that things were left out. And again, you know, it all goes back to there are reasons that these things were left out of the Bible. People, entities, energies didn't want us to know, to have some of the knowledge that would greatly allow us to formulate a more truthful opinion. Or, you know, again, you know, the whole New Age philosophy trying to get us to believe that, you know, we were seated. If the Book of Enoch and other lost books are really studied or were really studied more by mainstream media, I think it would help to develop a more knowledgeable understanding of what this world is really like and what we're up against, right? But so frequently, staunch Christians, the person that was my mentor, a priest, when I shared some of my visions with him that I shared, he said to me, if it's not in the Bible, it's not real. And I asked specifically about the Book of Enoch. And he got very adamant and said to me, the Book of Enoch is not in the Bible, and therefore it's not real. Don't read anything that's not of the Bible and specifically of the gospel. That's where you'll find your truth. But I know that not to be true. I know that the things that are spoken of in the Book of Enoch, are real. Again, take these things and think about them, ponder them, and see what you come up with. In future episodes, as I said, of this show in particular, I'll be going more into depth on some of the topics that we've covered. I chose to just kind of skirt around and talk about several things in nature just because they were on my mind, not for any other specific reason. But there you go. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time, and have a great week.